Our next guest on Downtown is the winner of 4 Grammy Awards. She's got another 11 nominations, a member of the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame, the author of 4 books, including her wonderful memoir, Composed. She's had 21 country top 40 hits, 11 of them going all the way to number 1 on the charts. And she's coming to the State Theater in Portland on April 9th to perform songs from her wonderful new album, She Remembers Everything. Here's the title tune of that album from Roseanne Cash.
Who knows who she used to be before it all went dark? Was she like a string of fire, a pane of glass, beating heart?
The new album is just so incredible. When it first came out, I posted the title tune on social media, and I immediately had a couple of woman friends reach out to me. One of them said, "This is amazing therapy." And the other one quoted the opening line of the song, "Who knows who she used to be before it all went dark," and said, "How does Roseanne Cash know me and my life?" So many women, so many people can relate to that, as you say, unnamed trauma.
Yeah, I have had a lot of women reach out to me too. That's not to say I haven't had men say that they relate and that they, you know, love the record, but in particular, women who are of a certain age, who are, you know, past their 30s, they understand that struggle with wondering about who you were before trauma and spending your life finding out who that person is. And also just the sense of mortality that hangs ever closer, and loss and rage and love, long-term relationships. You know, these are not songs about hookups and breakups, not songs about kids.
No, and you've described, and I think it's a perfect description, you've described She Remembers Everything as both a come-on and a threat.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very seductive to tell someone you love, you know, "I'll remember everything about you. I'll remember everything that happened to us." But there's also a warning in that.
Did you feel a sense of urgency in writing these songs, given what's been going on in this nation in the last couple of years?
Yes, I do. But that doesn't mean that this is all about what's going on in society. I mean, some of these songs I wrote 10 years ago. 2 of them I wrote 10 years ago. The rest are newer. And She Remembers Everything, the title song, I wrote before the Me Too movement, before any of this happened, you know, before this kind of hidden contempt rose to the surface. And I'm the mother of 4 daughters and a son, and these questions have been weighing on my heart, these issues. And so I thought, when all of this started happening, I thought, well, that song was a little bit prescient. It knew what was coming.
Well, the Undiscovered Country, along with giving a nod to the Bard and to your father, also about women finding their voice. How, as an observer, how did we take this step back in America? It seemed like you and I were around the same age growing up through the civil rights years. It felt like we had moved on, and now here we are back where we started in many ways. How did this happen?
I don't know. I mean, I feel the same way. I was wondering the very same thing. Like when during the civil rights era, the first wave of the women's movement, you know, there was this kind of awakening in the country, and I thought everything would end up on a level playing field, that women would get equal pay, that there would be equal respect, that we would have equal chance to be heads of Fortune 500 companies and equally represented in government, and that it would be equal in all ways. And the same with minorities. And I started thinking, well, progress, if you assume it goes in one direction, but it requires devotion to go in one direction. You can't take it for granted. I mean, that's the thing I've realized.
Yeah, we've learned that the hard way. I was absolutely blown away by the song Eight Gods of Harlem on so many levels. First, the wonderful collaboration with Kris Kristofferson, Elvis Costello, guys you've known for a long, long time.
Yeah, they've been friends. I mean, Kris and I have been friends since I was a teenager, and Elvis and I for 20-plus years, 25 years. And I kept thinking about writing a song with them, and, you know, on paper, that just doesn't make sense. But I asked them, and they said yes, and I had written the first verse to Eight Gods of Harlem, and I said, do you want to finish this, and do you want to write in character? Do you want, and, you know, I wrote the mother's verse, Kris wrote the father's verse, Elvis wrote the brother's verse, and we actually finished writing it and recorded it in one day. It was really remarkable.
Well, I'm full-time, I'm a high school teacher, and...
Oh, good for you. You're one of my heroes.
Well, when I got to the line, we prayed to the God of collateral children, I flash back to a couple of years ago when we had a lockdown drill that we weren't sure was a drill, and I remember thinking, you know, this is not what I signed up for when I decided to become a teacher, but I thank you on behalf of all the teachers and all the students for the 20 years or more that you've put into trying to put a stop to gun violence in this country.
Oh, thank you. No, you didn't sign up for it. Actually, none of us signed up for this, where you had to fear sending your children to school. And I mean, I've always seen the fight against gun violence and the longing and pressing for common sense gun control as an extension of parenting. You know, we have laws that you have to lock an aspirin bottle. We have laws about the cords on curtains for babies, about how wide the slats can be on cribs. The laws around guns are either non-existent or so riddled with loopholes, no pun intended, that they're ineffective, basically. And it's not right. It's not fair to the next generation.
Well, very personal for you, because if I remember right, one of your daughters was held up at gunpoint.
Yes, she was. But I was active in this cause before that. I mean, it was so ironic, but it just made me dig my heels in. And, you know, she suffered trauma for years after that. Thank God she's recovered, but nobody should have to go through that.
We're talking with Roseanne Cash on Downtown. The new album is She Remembers Everything. Roseanne will be at the State Theater in Portland on April 9th. I love the song Crossing to Jerusalem and the way it falls on the album right up against Not Many Miles to Go. It made me think back to one of my favorite songs of yours, From the Wheel, The Truth About You, which you and John wrote pretty early in your relationship. And, you know, it starts with All Our Secrets Fall Like Raindrops Between Us. And now in these new songs, Just One Promise Left to Keep, it really chronicles an amazing relationship, the 25 years or so that you've been together, and the future with, as you point out, more miles behind than ahead.
Oh, you're actually moving me the way you talk about it. You know, I mean, I hadn't made that connection to The Truth About You that we wrote early on, and you're absolutely right. It's like you get rid of the secrets first and the power struggles, and then 25 years in, you go, oh, wow, there, one of us is inevitably is going to leave the other, and it makes it so much more precious. And I started thinking about the artifacts in our lives that we'll leave behind, you know, that his guitar will survive us, that we can see the Empire State Building outside our window and how that resonates for us. And it'll all be there when we're gone. And hopefully it will carry some memories, you know, that people will remember us.
Things get a little dark on the album with My Least Favorite Life. And I think back to, I loved your book, Composed, and I think back to something you wrote about there. Was it John Stewart who asked you years ago in writing, where's the madness, Rose?
Yeah, that was his constant refrain. But where's the madness, Rose? Like, if I would try to write something too perfect, where's the madness? That was a great lesson in letting go and in, you know, allowing chaos and walking into nightmares, knowing you could come back. And My Least Favorite Life on the album is somewhat a nightmare, but I think everyone has felt that, like, that the night that you twist on the rack is the time that you feel most at home. We've all wallowed in despair. But, you know, if we're lucky, we come back.
We had Bryan Cranston on the show a while back, and he was talking about how having a strong marriage and a secure family life gave him that freedom to be able to explore the darkness a little bit. Do you feel like you have that same safety net that allows you to go to those dark places?
Absolutely. I think he's absolutely right that, you know, your family and friends and are foundational and a safety net. Not that you should use them in that way, but if you've created that kind of strength for yourself, it doesn't build a bridge to come back and give you freedom to explore really dark places. And also, for me, I didn't realize this until after the fact, but my last child went to college. He's in his second year now. And I found myself more willing to go into chaotic, dark places in my writing after he was in college. Like, well, I don't have to go to a parent-teacher meeting today or, you know, show up in a way that doesn't compromise your child's safety or sanity. So it was interesting. I actually talked to Elvis about that.
I listened to the album the way we always used to listen to albums, starting at track one and going straight through, and I love the arrangement of the songs. How important was that sequencing to you?
Oh, God bless you for that. I once on Twitter, not on this record, but on the last one, I was agonizing over sequencing, and I wrote on Twitter, why am I worried about this? No one cares anymore. You know, you listen at random play and single downloads. And I immediately got dozens of responses that said, I care, take your time. I want to know how you see, what kind of set it is. I want to know what sequence you think. So it's always been really important for me. That doesn't mean I'm very good at it. I got a lot of input from Tucker, particularly, Tucker Martin, who produced half the album. He kind of owned it. He said, I'm actually pretty good about this. And he offered the sequence that we ended up keeping.
Well, I think it's fantastic. Hey, we're talking with Roseanne Cash on Downtown. Are you more comfortable with ambiguity in your writing now?
I am, very much so. I don't think there's a need to spell it out. It's like the poet Rilke said, you have to love the questions. And I do. I love the questions.
What did you learn about yourself while you were writing these songs?
What did I learn about myself? I don't know. That, well, like you just said, I'm more comfortable with ambiguity than I've ever been. That the urgency you feel when you look at your own mortality, not that far in the distance, can give rise to beauty, to art, music. That I am not afraid of not people-pleasing.
The cover art is so very striking by Portia Munson. How did her art speak to you?
Well, I just love Portia, and I knew her work before I knew her. And I thought it had this same kind of gothic femininity to it that I was writing. And it just seemed to mirror it in this odd way to me. I don't know if everyone would see that, but it did to me. And particularly the image that she deconstructed for the cover of the tree and the knife and the elbow. And so I just called her out of the blue and I said, have you ever done an album cover and would you be interested in it? And she said, yeah, I'll try that. Never done it, but I'll try it. And I just love it. I love her.
A couple of the songs on here were part of a collaboration you did with T-Bone Burnett for True Detective. Mm-hmm. Do you still think of yourself as a writer first and a singer second?
Yes, absolutely. And when my voice falls apart, I can still write. I mean, he called me to write lyrics for him for two of the songs for True Detective, and he and Lyra Lynn wrote the music. And I like that. I like collaborating, being just the lyricist. That's really satisfying for me.
And you're also part of a, what looks like a great collaboration with Dan Rizzi on Bird on a Blade.
Oh, that was really fun. So Dan, you know, I have a lot of friends who are visual artists, and he's a beautiful painter. And we've been friends a long time, and for a decade we've been saying, you know, we should really do a book together, my lyrics and Dan's art. And I said, finally said, look, I've got this album coming out in November. Let's just do it now. And that was about 9 months before, and we put it together fairly quickly. I'm very proud of that book. I love it. I think it's beautiful.
What's happening with the adaptation you've been working on of the film Norma Rae?
We're 5 years in, and I don't feel too bad about it because I hear that the average to write a Broadway musical is 7 years. And we're nearly there. We're nearly there. You know, it's a matter of not just rewriting, but getting financing, finding the right theater, and a lot of moving parts.
You've got
and
a big...
also, there's this saying, somebody told me, Adam Gopnik told me this. He said, you know, if you make an album and you're 80% there, you're great. If you write a book, you're 80% there, you're great. If you write a Broadway musical and you're not 98% there, it's done. You're over.
A big tour kicks off for you very soon. You'll be stopping here in Maine April 9th, that is, at the State Theater in Portland. Somebody, a wise person, once wrote many years ago, a lonely road is a bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. I wrote that. I wrote that when I was 12 years old. It's my mother saved my English papers from middle school. And she sent them to me at some point before she died, and I found that line. It was a study, a thing we did on metaphors in English class, and I kept that line, and I popped it right into a song I was writing.
You're also going to be part of a big event on March 27th at the Ryman with friend of our show, Ken Burns. I can't wait to see his new series on country music, and this is sort of the kickoff for that.
You are going to love it. I can say that with utter assurance. This series, I wept all the way through it because no one has ever told the entire story of every part of country music until now, from Appalachia to Texas swing to the Bakersfield sound, all of it pulled together. It's really remarkable. So, yeah, there's a multi-artist show at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville to kick that off in the spring.
Well, you've given us some great advice. I think it's my favorite lyric from the album, from Everyone But Me. We run a similar chorus on a track laid with broken glass. So tie your shoes real tight. It goes by real fast.
It does indeed, doesn't it?
Well, I can't wait to see the show in Portland. I hope to be one of that 6% in the audience.
I can tell already that you are.
Roseanne, thank you so much. It's been a real treat to talk with you. I appreciate it.
Rich, I can't tell you how gratifying it is to speak to someone who's so well-informed. Thank you.